Gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the NCAA Division I Committee on Infractions Press Conference. At this time, all parties are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. As a reminder, I'd like to tell you this conference is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to our host, Emily James. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome to today's press call to discuss the NCAA Division I Committee on Infractions decision regarding Southern Methodist University. As members of the media, you should have received a link to both the press release and the public decision, which contains the details of this case. The information can also be found online at ncaa.org. The Committee on Infractions is an independent group comprised of representatives across the NCAA membership and the public. Members who reviewed this case include Michael Adams, Chief Hearing Officer and Chancellor of Pepperdine University, Greg Christopher, Athletics Director at Xavier University, Jack Ford, Legal Analyst for CBS News, Thomas Hill, Senior Vice President for Student Affairs at Iowa State University, James O'Fallon, Law Professor and Faculty Athletics Representative at the University of Oregon, and Sankar Suryanarayan, University Counsel, Princeton University. Michael Adams will now discuss the findings and decisions of the Infractions Committee. Following his opening comments, he will take questions.
Thank you, Emily, and thanks to those of you who've called in. I'm Michael Adams. I'm currently the Chancellor of Pepperdine University, and I'm the President Emeritus of the University of Georgia, where I served for 16 years. The Committee on Infractions decision that we're releasing today details the findings and the penalties in this case. Our comments are designed to frame the issues, and I'll be happy to respond to your questions, although I would remind you that the report stands on its own merits. The violations that occurred on this occasion at Southern Methodist University included academic fraud, unethical conduct, and head coach control or lack of such in the men's basketball program, and recruiting and unethical conduct in the men's golf program. As a result of these violations, the former head men's golf coach, the institution's former compliance director, and a former men's basketball administrative assistant violated the NCAA's unethical conduct rules. The head men's basketball coach failed to promote an atmosphere of compliance under NCAA rules when he did not report violations about which he knew, and he was not initially truthful during an interview with the NCAA enforcement staff. This case started in 2013 when the former compliance director admitted to falsifying sign-in sheets for two rules education sessions that were still required by the terms of a 2011 infractions decision that impacted SMU. The education themselves, to the best of our knowledge, actually happened, but the former compliance director did not document them. Because he knowingly submitted the falsified sign-in sheets, the former compliance director violated NCAA ethical conduct rules. He also made a decision not to participate in the infractions process. The violations in the men's basketball program centered on an instance of academic fraud. A former assistant men's basketball coach encouraged one student athlete to enroll in an online course to meet NCAA initial eligibility standards and be admitted to the university. After he enrolled in the course, a former men's basketball administrative assistant obtained this student's username and password and then completed all of the student's coursework. The student athlete received fraudulent credit for the course and as a result of that competed while ineligible during his freshman season. The student athlete admitted to the NCAA enforcement staff that the former administrative assistant asked him to provide false information during the interview. The former administrative assistant, therefore, violated the NCAA's ethical conduct rules when she provided false information during her interviews and asked the student-athlete to provide false information during his interview. The former administrative assistant initially cooperated with the investigation, but later ended her second interview early and refused to provide documentation and denied additional interview requests. While the university noted the head basketball coach received rules education, we did not see a record of steps that he therefore took to establish and ensure a culture of compliance within his program. Although he didn't have direct knowledge or involvement in this misconduct, he didn't follow up on the completion of the coursework. He didn't report the misconduct to the compliance staff, to the conference office, or to the enforcement staff for more than a month after he learned of the activity. When asked by the NCAA enforcement staff about the potential violations, he initially denied any information about the conversations with the former administrative assistant and the student athlete. Because of this, he failed to promote an atmosphere of compliance within his program. The violations in the golf program centered around recruiting issues almost exclusively. The former golf coach had 64 impermissible contacts with 10 prospects and at least 7 parents of prospects over the course of 10 months. The majority of these contacts occurred a year or more before the NCAA rules allowed contact with prospects. Although the former golf coach said he too received rules education, he did admit that the recruiting contacts were intentional. He also offered university merchandise and golf equipment to prospects at significantly reduced prices in 2013, and he did not consult with the compliance staff to see if his actions were consistent with NCAA rules. Over a four-month period, a booster associated with the school contacted 9 golf prospects and facilitated contact between the former golf coach and the prospects and their families. This booster also encouraged the prospects to arrange unofficial visits to the university. During his interview with the enforcement staff of the NCAA, the former golf coach said he was unaware of the booster's activity with the program. However, the NCAA staff determined that the former golf coach was aware of the booster's contact with the prospects because he was copied on emails and was given updates on the prospects by the booster. The former golf coach violated NCAA ethical conduct rules when he denied knowledge of the booster activity. Therefore, the committee, after hearings with representatives of the institution, today issues the following penalties and measures that are prescribed. Beginning today, September 28, 2015, and ending September 28, 2018, the institution will be on 3 years of probation. The institution will pay a $5,000 fine plus 1% of the total budget of the men's basketball and golf programs. There will be a 2015-2016 postseason ban for the men's basketball and golf programs. Wins in the men's basketball program, in which the student athlete so mentioned participated while ineligible during the 2013-2014 season, those wins will be vacated. The university will work with the NCAA to identify the games impacted following the release today of this public report. There shall be a permanent disassociation of the booster mentioned in the report from the university's athletic program based on his involvement with violations in the men's golf program. The committee is also issuing a 3-year prohibition of apparel and merchandise sales to men's golf prospects. There will be a suspension of 30% of the 2015-16 season for the head men's basketball coach. In other words, 30% of the games he will not be allowed to participate. issuing a two-year show cause order for the head men's basketball coach through September 28, 2017. We're issuing a five-year show cause order for the former head men's golf coach through September 28, 2019. This coach will receive 1 year of credit toward his show cause period for the time since he left the university. We're also rendering a five-year show cause order for the former men's basketball administrative assistant that will last through September 28, 2020. There shall be a two-year show cause order for the former compliance director through September 28, 2017. If the former golf coach, compliance director, or administrative assistant seek employment at an NCAA member school, both the school and individual must appear before the COI to detail why his or her athletic duties should not be restricted. That's the Committee on Infractions. There shall be a three-year reduction of men's golf scholarships from the average number awarded over the previous 4 years by 25%. There will be a three-year reduction of men's basketball scholarships by 9. The university will be given credit for its self-imposed 2 scholarship reduction for 2015-16. There shall be a prohibition from hosting unofficial visits for a 13-week period during the summer of 2016 for both the men's basketball and golf programs. A reduction of recruiting communications with prospects by 12.5% in the men's basketball and golf programs during 2015-16, and a prohibition from communicating with prospects for a 7-week period in the spring of 2016. There shall be a reduction of 20 off-campus recruiting days in men's basketball, which was self-imposed by the university, and a reduction of off-campus recruiting days in men's golf by 12.5%, which was self-imposed by the university. This concludes my opening remarks, and I would be happy to respond to any questions that the press may wish to offer to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone indicating you've been placed in queue. You can remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. It has been requested that you limit yourself to one question. For any additional questions, you will need to queue up again. One moment, please, for the first question. Mac Engel, Sports Star Telegram, go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, you mentioned that the basketball coach was not necessarily forthcoming initially in the investigation. Did Coach Brown eventually come around, and was he compliant in the investigative process with the NCAA, or did he remain, for lack of a better word, stubborn?
Well, Coach Brown meet with the staff, and he appeared before the committee, and that's probably directly responsive to the question.
Our next question comes from line of Pat Ford, Yahoo Sports. Please go ahead.
Yes, Chancellor Adams, the reduction in unofficial visits, I'm wondering if that is a new penalty or if that's been applied before in previous cases.
You know, I'm honestly not certain of where there have been applications before, but I do know under the new structure that's allowed, and it was decided to go in that direction by the full committee.
Our next question comes from the line of Bill Nichols, Dallas Morning News. Please go ahead.
I'm wondering, is there any reason why these cases this case cannot be appealed?
You know, I know of no reason why any NCAA case can't be appealed. The institution would be within its rights to do so. The decision that, you know, has to be made is whether to deal with whatever punishment or penalties exist now and move on, or to go through the appeal process, and that's a decision for the institution and the appeals committee, not this committee. Hello?
Can we move to the next question, please, operator?
Yes, our next question comes from the line of Anthony Kegel. Please go ahead.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on the responsibility that Coach Brown would have, given the fact that it was a former administrator who allegedly took this course for the student and completed the work?
Well, I'm not going to say anything derogatory about the men's basketball coach there. I would simply point out that NCAA rules today require that the head coach bear responsibility for the program. The coach, in this case, hired the assistant coach, the administrative assistant, and recruited the student athlete involved. So generally, the committee held him responsible for the activities in the program.
And our next question comes from the line of Pat Ford. Please go ahead.
Yes, follow-up question. Although there's obviously a significant amount of time between the late 1980s and now, SMU had one of the more significant penalties ever given by the NCAA. Did the committee at all express any concern about having another major infractions case involving the school?
Well, the institution looked at that in two ways. I mean, the committee. First of all, the institution had invoked a fairly substantial series of rules compliance sessions. They got into difficulty when the former compliance director did not document those sessions. And then the fact that this institution has been before the NCAA so many times is mentioned in the report, if you read the report, as an aggregating factor. I believe this is the institution's 10th appearance for major violations before the NCAA, and the committee was aware of that. And despite institutional actions, we had misconduct by the head men's basketball coach, an administrative assistant that reported to him, the former compliance director, and the former head golf's coach. So on one hand, the institution had made some efforts to comply through its current probation, and yet at the same time, a fairly large number of individuals were making at least individual decisions that were unethical. So the committee had to balance what were individual actions on some hand and what the institutional compliance was on the other.
Next question comes from Stephen Hawkins. Please go ahead.
Kelly, in that same vein, there were some, obviously Larry Brown had left two schools that had NCAA violations after he left previously. Did any of that come into play? I have not seen anything about that in the report yet.
No, the committee, the committee's responsibility is to look at this institution and to look at what may or may not have been done improperly in this case. I don't remember any online or offline discussion about any previous activities of the basketball coach, and it would probably be improper for us to have done so.
Next question comes from Dana O'Neill. Please go ahead.
I'm not sure if this is a question for you or the committee, but why is that? If a school can be held culpable for multiple appearances before the institution or before the committee, the school is made up of individuals. So if individuals make multiple appearances for the committee, why aren't they then held to the same standards as the institution?
Well, they are held to standards, and if you listen to the penalties, there's show cause orders in all of the cases of the individuals that we found to have acted improperly. So I think the committee responded both to individuals and to the institution as a whole. And it would have probably been improper on our part to have not paid attention to both. But we don't have the right to go back through a person's entire history in a case like this. We only have the right to investigate the allegations and to make judgments as to whether the allegations are legitimate or not.
Our next question comes from the line of Skylar Dixon. Please go ahead.
My question was asked. Thank you.
Welcome. Question from the line of Jeff Goodman. Please go ahead.
How does the two-year show cause to Larry Brown, to the SMU head coach, affect him, other than the fact that it looks like in here he's got to go to the seminar each of the two years. Is there any other, I know it kind of says it vague that there are other restrictions. What are those with him?
Well, he will have to attend the appropriate rules sessions. The institution will have to document that and ensure that he is within compliance with NCAA rules, which is what we require of any coach. He does not work the NCAA. He works for the institution, and the relationship is between him and the institution.
And we have a question from the line of Andy Katz. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. When you're discussing a postseason ban, how much latitude do you have within that to tweak it to say, hypothetically, maybe you ban the coach, maybe the player involved, or if there was an assistant coach involved, rather than banning the players who weren't involved in this particular case? How much latitude do you have?
Well, we have latitude, as you saw, in our prohibiting the coach to participate in 30% of the season. I think there's a general thought in the cases that I've looked at where one does inevitably look at the entire team, and there are clearly a number of members of the team who suffer personally by not being able to participate. And yet the NCAA is made up of teams of member institutions, and most of our responses are, I think, properly involving teams. You always regret when any student athlete is unable to participate. But in this case, we thought both institutional team and individual decisions were appropriate.
And we have no further questions.
Thank you very much.
This concludes our comments. A recording of this teleconference will be available in the near future at ncaa.org. Thanks.